repairs. We're highly respected in the commercial community and have a resolution for problems related to servicing. Let us know if you need our assistance. We're here to help. Give us a call at 871-4200 or go to accesshardware.net. Thank you for listening.
On the Couch is brought to you by Access Hardware. Let them help you with your security solutions, design, and consulting. Go to accesshardware.net or call 871-4200.
Welcome back, my friends, to the show that never ends. We're so glad you could attend. Come inside, come inside. There behind the glass stands a real blade of grass. Be careful as you pass. Move along, move along. Come inside, the show's about to start.
Boom,
there we go.
Boom, boom.
Let's start the day.
We're back.
Yeah. We're tuned to 11:10 a.m., 96.7 FM, News Talk and Sports for Maui. Jack is here behind the controls for On the Couch with Don Couch. Good morning, Don.
Good morning. How are you?
Great. How about you?
Excellent.
As sunshiny as this morning.
Yeah, it is.
I'm almost irritating. I'm in such a good mood.
Wait, yeah, that kind of goes around in full circle, doesn't
yes.
it?
Yes.
Well, we have a large contingent of guests
yes,
here
we
today.
Do.
Yes. We have with us, there was a report on Friday, June 14th newspaper about a water study in South Maui beaches exceeding sediment standards.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, that's a good subject to have people on. And I happen to have known for a while several of the people that were involved in the study, and they're here.
All right.
I have with us from right to around the table to the left, so everybody can see.
Yes, everybody
on
can
their TVs.
See their.
We have
on the radio.
See on the radio. Yes, Alana, you're Kenan. How are you this morning?
Doing great, thanks, Don.
Good. And what do you do for the group? Is called Hui Oka Viola. Is that there? I don't know where I put the emphasis. But
Hui Oka Viola, perfectly
okay.
said.
Excellent.
So for Hui Oka Viola, I am a safety coordinator and the communications coordinator. And
okay.
I also work for the Nature Conservancy, who is a partner of
partner.
Hui Oka Viola.
Okay. And then we have Tova Callender.
Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Great.
You can move that.
You
know,
okay.
It is movable.
Rather than
there
move
you
James.
Go.
Yeah.
Yes. And so what is your position with the Hui?
With Hui Oka Viola, I'm on the steering committee
okay.
and also on the subcommittee doing the tech and data end of things.
Okay, and what do you do in real life?
In my my other day job, I coordinate the West Maui Ridge to Reef Initiative, which is one of the
yes.
three partner organizations
yes.
That make up Hui Oka Viola.
And then we have James Strickland. Good morning, sir.
Good morning.
Hey, you're surrounded by a bunch of beautiful women there.
That's right.
So what do you do, and what's your position?
I'm the project manager for Hui Oka Viola.
Oh, okay. So you are actual paid
yes.
Staff. Everybody else is your bosses and part
right.
of other agencies that come in, all come together.
Right.
So can you tell us a little bit about what Hui Oka Viola is?
Sure. We're a we're volunteer-based. We're a citizen science group. We have about 40 volunteers between West and South Maui, and we monitor coastal water. We have 19 sites in West Maui and then 20 sites in South Maui that we regularly monitor.
Mm-hmm. And how, when you say monitor, what does that look like?
So we are looking at, there's some physical parameters. We're looking at pH, dissolved oxygen, salinity, temperature. Then we're also looking at nutrients. But it's all things that could have little or big severe effects on the ocean health.
Okay. So when you say you're monitoring it, is it, I mean, do you go out personally and get samples, or how does that work?
Yeah, so we have trained volunteers that are, they're engaged in citizen science.
Okay.
And we have volunteer teams actually go out regularly and take the water samples.
So anybody can do it, or do they have to come in to your group, join your group, and get training?
Oh, so anyone can do it, but, well, if you're a part of our group, yeah.
so So. Let's say I want to start collecting samples. How would one go do that?
Oh, good question. So first you just go out and observe a team, just so you'd have firsthand knowledge of what all you'd be doing. And then after that, if you're still interested, then we have a training program you go to, mm-hmm. or you go through. And then you just join the team.
Mm-hmm. And then, go ahead.
I'm not sure it's quite so simple, James. He's making it sound very easy. This is a very dedicated group of volunteers, and they are committing to being there every 3 weeks and showing up for their teamwork at that interval.
Okay, so it's not,
willy-nilly, I like water quality this month and not the next. This is, I am going to commit to
every 3 weeks
showing up, and I'm going to commit to the really high standards that are required for the data collection.
Oh, okay.
So what distinguishes our initiative from some of the other ones that have come before this that had a different goal, and that's great, but ours is to meet the Department of Health standards for the way that the data is collected.
Ah, okay.
So we've got a quality assurance officer, and we have really strict protocols. Calibration of the equipment happens on a schedule. We make sure nothing has expired, and so it's holding it to a higher bar that allows the data to then be used by the Department of Health and by other managers for actions.
So if I were to join and say, okay, I'm going to do this, I can't just go out and say, oh, I'm driving by Kalama Park, I'll go get some water at this time.
Not if you want your data to go into the Huioka-Viola data set.
Gotcha.
It's a bit more of a commitment. But
okay.
It's worth it because you get to contribute to something that has all those other levels of usefulness and meaning.
Oh, okay.
It's interesting. I heard that term citizen science.
Yes.
The second time this week.
Oh.
Which is cool. All tides in. Ties in with,
speaking of King Tides.
With the King Tides,
yeah.
Which is what this is all about.
That relates to it, too. It's actually funny because in the beginning, a lot of our volunteers didn't like the term citizen science.
I love it.
And that's because some of them actually are scientists. We have a very high-caliber group of people
working
with us. And some of them had, they've retired from careers, but they're bringing all those transferable skills along with them. So that was kind of why we went with the Clean Ocean team. But, it is, by definition, citizens doing science to a certain level. So, yeah.
But it's well-regulated. It's not willy-nilly. So you tell them, okay, today's the day we're going to go out and mm-hmm. Is that all based on scientific? This is the certain tides, this is the certain day, whatever, certain parameters to say, okay, now in this time period we need you to go out and collect?
It's written on it's based on the protocols that were written to develop that quality standard. So they're based on what Department of Health has approved in the Quality Assurance Project Plan. In terms of hitting the tide or not hitting the tide, there's a certain time of morning they're going out. What we found in the beginning was when we were going out every 2 weeks, this is the royal we, because it's an army of volunteers.
Yeah.
I'm not doing the sampling. I'm behind the curtains planning things. But when we went out every 2 weeks, we were hitting the same tidal cycle. And that actually changes the results versus going out every 3 weeks, because then you're hitting the tide at different points.
Gotcha.
And so some of the parameters that are connected to that tidal influence, you get a much more randomized effect by breaking it up. So it's a specific time every morning, every 3 weeks, and that gives that randomization to when the samples are being taken.
Well, that's that's really good to hear that, when you say citizen science, sometimes it's, okay, it's just people wanting to go out there and do some nice things, but there are other, it seems like it's, I don't know how you would say it. I don't want to say vigilantism, but kind of like that, in that we're just going to go out and do what we want and provide our samples, whereas you have a controlled, it's a very controlled, okay, that's mm-hmm. that's helps a lot to kind of put it into focus, what's going on.
And it's part of what makes the program kind of a heavy lift that relies on a lot of people.
Yeah.
So the three groups that form the coalition behind it, the army of volunteers who are out there, the team leads, and then of course James as a mm-hmm. project manager. It takes a lot of doing to hold things to that standard.
Okay. And so as a safety officer, what do you do?
Part of that initial training that everyone goes through is to acknowledge what are the main hazards. Thinking a little bit more about what sampling looks like, volunteers are only going knee deep into water. And if there's high surf, don't go into those sites. It's knowing your comfort zone and your limits. But typically, the beaches that we've selected are easy access. You're not going very far into the water. And then as you're backing out and you're carrying buckets of waters and samples back to your car. So some of the samples you are actually testing in a trunk lab. Our volunteers have created spaces in the backs of their cars to set up equipment. And for those parameters that are time sensitive, like temperature, dissolved oxygen, pH, those are all measured right in the car. And then some of them are taken back to lab and frozen. And some samples are shipped to a lab on Oahu per DOH standard. So driving is involved. And so we talk about the safety of driving. We have a whole tree of who to call if someone doesn't report back by a certain time. So it's just making sure our teams are looked out for, they're aware of the hazards, developing a first aid kit that's always with the groups. And yeah, a lot of common sense stuff.
Yeah, it just that you would think. First of all, you mentioned buckets. I was thinking vials here or there, but you have buckets? You're taking buckets of water?
We have buckets. We also have vials.
Oh, and we bottles. Have syringes as well.
Okay.
But it starts with buckets.
Wow. That's pretty...
You have to start somewhere.
Yeah.
It's start with a bucket.
Impressive. So you mentioned you only go out knee deep. But isn't that kind of where the impact zone is of the waves? And so, of course, it's going to be full of sediments and whatnot. I don't know.
So, again, this is how DOH samples. So that is part of the protocol that is replicated. And to make sure that we are not measuring sand that gets kicked up as you walk into the water, there's a very specific walk that you do. You take your time this little crane walk and make sure you can observe that the sand has settled before gathering your samples.
Wow.
So that's part of the training.
Well, that's just walking, but the waves, when the impact of the waves, that causes a turbidity as well. Yeah.
And typically you're taking your sample as the wave approaches you. So it's a fresh wave that has pushed the sand or anything kicked up behind you.
See?
So timing is important.
It's a lot more than you can learn. And not, no offense to the newspaper, but there's a lot more you can learn than just what they can write in the newspaper in a short article.
Well, and Don, I think what you're getting at is there's a whole lot of complexity to doing water quality monitoring.
Oh, yeah.
It's a very ephemeral state how much, you know, I mean, turbidity is the measure of water clarity.
Right.
And that's what we're looking at. But you're right. There's resuspension that factors in. It's how long since the last rainfall, what's happening with the energy in the coast. And that's why you've got to sample over a long enough period of time to get that baseline.
Gotcha.
And the baseline's not dictated by, oh, we're done 12 months. It's dictated by, okay, let's look at the data and see, are there still wacky anomalies happening? Are we seeing the seasonal effect? Are we really understanding? Do we feel like we're ready to back off because we understand it or not? So it's complicated for sure. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so now let's go to what we got in the newspaper article. Some of the results of the studies. This was all for South Maui. The meeting you had was for South Maui. So tell us a little bit what you found. Somebody. James, you're the guy.
I'm the guy. So the Department of Health, they have standards that they've put out for nutrient levels and turbidity. And so if you exceed these standards that Department of Health, it's a clean water branch. They're the group that are part of DOH, Department of Health, that is responsible for the water testing. And they, so they have a set list of standards, and if your parameter, if it exceeds that standard, then they say that site is impaired.
Okay.
So for South Maui, every single site, so we test 20 sites, every single site has at least one impairment for the nutrients.
Now, when you say nutrients, what are we talking about?
Well, it's an array of things. So nutrients could come from fertilizer or agricultural runoff or...
But I mean, I guess...
Oh, plant food.
Plant food?
Plant.
Basically nitrates and phosphates and stuff.
Yeah, okay. So the problem with high nutrients is you can have things like... It could lead to something like an algae bloom.
Right.
And if you have an algae bloom, that covers the surface of the water and everything underneath it, sunlight can't get through. So
right.
Pretty much everything underneath an algae bloom will end up dying like the coral.
Right.
And to better define what impaired is, if you exceed a state standard, it's essentially saying that you're exceeding a level which is deemed safe for people and the environment. So that's a red flag for okay. those sites.
So, and this one says in the article, Cove Park was a big one. So what nutrients were found there?
Go Tova.
So the nitrate-nitrite levels were very high around Cove Park.
Nitrate-nitrite.
105 times the state standard.
Okay.
Woo-wee.
So my question is, I know people are trying to, I think it was in this article as well, talking about the whole injection wells going out into the thing, which there are some nitrates in there, but not, did you say phosphorus and mm-hmm. stuff? My big thing there is, did you test the water going into, or did you get data of the water going into the wells? Because that's, you know, kind of, there are some issues there, right?
These are great questions. And absolutely, as soon as we show we've got this baseline data, everyone wants to know what is the source of the problem.
Right.
Because, of course, that's what we're relating to.
Right, right. We're
we
trying
don't really
to figure
relate
out what
to
the source
many,
is.
Right, right, we want to know what the source is. So we aren't quite there yet.
Ah,
so
gotcha.
What our data is showing is that we have an exceedance to the tune of 105 times
yes,
the state standard. So the next step, and this is a part of what we kind of do in our peeled off subcommittee that's looking at the data and tech side of things, is to figure out what additional testing would we need to do? What other partners do we need to leverage to try and
right.
drill down into what are those sources?
So interesting thought, because you mentioned Cove Park. And one of the things about Cove Park is about any time between, 7 and 11 in the morning, there are 200 people, tourists mostly, surf schools.
It's
200
impressive.
And plus. And I'm guessing at least one or two, if not 50%, are relieving themselves right there in Cove Park. I mean, every hour on the hour, it's just... That one is kind of skewed a little bit. And the other part of it is along that road, Ili, there's a lot of cesspools that were there for a long, long time. So it's one of those things where finding the source in that one's going to be very difficult.
How far out at Cove Park do you go for the water test?
Knee level.
Just
yep.
Really? Just
yep,
knee
you're
level
short,
out there?
If you're I mean, tall, it's halfway to your knees.
Yeah. Okay. All right. I would think you'd go out a little further because of the just the situation there, you know?
Right. So because we are going with the state standard and the way that the Department of Health does it, we're sticking with their practices. What you're talking about is a really great point, and it is a need that we're identifying all over everywhere. If we
right.
want to see how it's interacting with the coral reef environment, or if we're wanting to understand what's happening on a transect moving away from the coast or along the coast, it's going to take additional sampling.
Yeah.
But as it stands, the fundraising that we collectively do to support the basic baseline monitoring, that's what we can sustain right now. So as we can figure out ways to fund doing more investigation, we will. In terms of the Cove Park site, there have been some pretty detailed studies done in that area
mm-hmm.
in the past that do suggest the flavor, if you will, of the nitrogen coming up does have a strong sewage signature. So, but land use changes over time, and who knows who's getting hooked onto the septic system, going off of septic and onto the sewer.
Right, right.
And there's shifts in what's happening with agriculture in the area above. There's a lot of
above, right.
connectivity through the groundwater
yes.
to nutrients coming to the coast. So it's a complicated dynamic, and we will hopefully start to work away at backing up, getting closer to the source, and bringing in other experts who can maybe redo some of the studies that you would need.
Yeah, that's the hard part, is trying to find the source. You know, everybody wants to say, oh, it seems obvious here, but there's a lot more. And one of the things that started this way back when was the whole algae bloom study that was done up and down the coast, and trying to pinpoint something, which is really hard to do. Mm-hmm. But the one that always got me was the fact that one of the biggest algae blooms was in Honolulu Bay, which there's no injection wells anywhere near Honolulu Bay. But what there is a lot of agricultural runoff. And that's been my contention all along. It's a lot of this, and you know, this is just kind of a common sense thing. A lot of this is runoff, whether it's agriculture or the crud on the streets and whatnot. Because mm-hmm. certainly in South Maui, you've got the agriculture above, and then all the population stuff, and people are not. For the most part, people are clean, but there's a lot of people out there that aren't clean, and they just throw stuff everywhere. Mm-hmm. And that's
it's complicated.
Yeah.
There's different contributors. We have a neat ability to look at the groundwater influence here in Hawaii. Mm-hmm. Silicates get picked up in the groundwater here. So if you look at the silicate concentrations and map them out, graph them out relative to your nitrate, mm-hmm. you see a very high correlation. Which means that, and this the correlation was stronger for West Maui than South Maui, but it's strong in both areas. It suggests that it's not what we think of as like overland runoff. It's not what's coming out of the stream in West Maui. It's what's draining in. Mm-hmm. And there have been other groundwater studies done in Hawaii in the last few years, or in Maui in the last few years, that really point to that kind of legacy agriculture application part of the story. And nobody knows how long it's going to take those nutrients to make their way through the system.
Right.
But that is definitely a pathway. And, you know, from my standpoint on West Maui Ridge Tariq, where we're trying to deal with sources of pollution, how do you deal with something that was applied 10, 20, 30 years
30
ago?
30 years ago, you know, yeah, exactly.
You have a really challenging solution set you've got to figure out.
And that's the interesting, one of the interesting side notes on this whole thing is the whole dye test in the West Maui injection wells. Yeah, it took 83 days for the first sign of the dye to come through, but it took 4 years for the last sign of that same dye to go through. So that's supposedly, you know, almost direct into the groundwater and down. Imagine how long it would take for the stuff in the soil to filter down and then finally get into the groundwater and go. So yeah, that's wow. That's a lot of stuff.
Yeah, there's a lag time.
We are up to our break time already, believe it or not. Okay. We've got a lot of stuff that we still need to talk about. So
absolutely.
Let's go on our break and get right back to it.
Okay, you're tuned to 1110 AM, 96.7 FM, News Talk and Sports for Maui. We're on the couch. We'll be back.
CBS News Update. President Trump says his 4th of July salute to America will display the strongest and most advanced military anywhere. White House aide Kellyanne Conway.
Thematically, how wonderful this country is, our troops and military, our great democracy, and great call to patriotism, the success of this administration in opening up so many jobs for individuals, what we've done for veterans.
Flyovers and tanks will be part of it. Pentagon correspondent David Martin.
They're going to be moved from the rail yard aboard flatbed trucks. So you're going to have some very heavy trucks wheeling through the city, but you're not going to have tanks with their treads tearing up the streets.
The flyovers and fireworks will cause operations to halt twice for just over 2 hours total at Reagan National Airport on the 4th. CBS News Update. I'm Steve Kaffin.
Jack Gist here with your latest Isle News headlines. Hurricane Barbara, the second named storm in the eastern Pacific this year, has intensified into a major hurricane. As of 5 this morning, Barbara's maximum sustained winds had increased to 130 miles an hour, making it a Category 4 hurricane. It's about 2,320 miles from Hilo, moving west-northwest about 14 miles an hour. Forecasters said Barbara could strengthen slightly today, but it should begin to weaken Wednesday through Thursday. A second death in less than a week was confirmed by officials at Twin Falls. It happened just after 11:15 a.m. yesterday. Maui fire officials say a 38-year-old cooler man jumped from the falls and into the lower pool, striking his head on the way down. Rescuers rushed to the scene and found medically trained bystanders conducting CPR on the man who was pulled to the water's edge. Officials say they were able to bring back a pulse and rushed the man to Maui Memorial Medical Center, where he later died. Island weather. Isolated showers, otherwise mostly sunny. The high around 88. Northeasterly trades up to 15 miles an hour.
CBS News on KAOI is brought to you by DeKind Paints, your locally owned Benjamin Moore dealer at 250 Alamaha Street. Quality paints for colorful dreams. DeKind Paints. Benjamin Moore for everything that matters.
Hi, this is Michelle, owner of DeKind Paints, where we provide quality paints for colorful dreams. As your independently owned paint and decorating retailer, we care about your project, whatever size it is. Take interior doors, trim, and cabinets, for example. These areas demand special care given their constant abuse from everyday life. We recommend Benjamin Moore's Advance. It cleans up easily with soap and water and offers a durable, furniture-quality finish. Its waterborne formula translates to low odor and low VOCs. And Advance is available in your choice of 3,500 colors, so you can achieve that just right look for your doors, trim, and cabinetry while still putting practicality first. Benjamin Moore, paint like no other. To find Advance and other Benjamin Moore products, visit DeKind Paints, located at 250 Alamaha Street in Kahului.
Aloha, this is Dale with Access Hardware Incorporated. We have been providing Hawaii with security services and access control since 1989. We're serious about protecting your employees and assets in case of a fire or burglary. We furnish and install hollow metal fire, commercial grade ADA and automatic doors, and all the required security hardware as well. We're an essential part of an overall loss control strategy. We have you covered with security solutions designed for commercial and industrial needs. We also provide video protection and electronic gates. We specialize in card access control systems for doors and vehicle gates. Access Hardware includes a complete fiber optic solution with service troubleshooting and repairs. We're highly respected in the commercial community and have a resolution for problems related to servicing. Let us know if you need our assistance. We're here to help. Give us a call at 871-4200 or go to accesshardware.net. Thank you for listening.
Ka'anapali Beach Hotel invites you to bring a hearty appetite and satisfy all your cravings at their legendary Sunday Champagne Brunch, voted Maui's number one brunch buffet. Relax and enjoy a savory selection of seafood, sushi, poke, prime rib, local Hawaiian favorites, omelets, waffles, and more. Indulge your sweet tooth from a mouth-watering array of cakes, pies, and pastries. Served from 9 to 1 every Sunday. For reservations, call 667-0124 or go to kbhmaui.com.
Planning to celebrate 4th of July with fireworks? Think safety first. Always keep a 10-foot clearance from power lines. Please don't string fireworks on utility or light poles, and be sure ladders or tie lines are clear of power lines. Overhead electrical lines are energized and can be dangerous. See anything caught in a power line? Please don't try to free it. Call Maui Electric at 871-7777. From our Maui Electric Ohana to yours, have a safe and happy 4th of July.
BWC Hawaii, cleaning beyond compare.
Wake up, get ready, kids to school, drive to work, drive home, kids, homework, supper, sports, errands, sleep. Busy?
PwC, the people who clean, invite you to reclaim your weekend. Affordable, customizable cleaning packages are available, so our pro cleaners perform those cleaning duties you would rather not touch. At PwC, you choose the budget. Give us a list of what you need, and we start from there. General cleaning, deep cleaning, carpet cleaning, window cleaning. At PwC, we do it all. That way, when the weekend comes, you'll do the things you want to do. Call PwC at 808-661-3760 or find us online at peoplewhoclean.com.
PwC Hawaii. Call us and we'll be there.
Yeah, man.
Serving Hawaii for 45 years.
Aloha, Richard here at Kimo's Furniture Maui, where we've been selling quality furniture at affordable prices for over 20 years. Kimo's Furniture is committed to offering you beautiful, high-quality, American-made sofas, sleepers, sectionals, and more for your home or vacation rental. We carefully select beautiful, one-of-a-kind pieces that you won't find anywhere else. At Kimo's, our motto is quality, service, and value. Named the best furniture store for the past 2 years, stop by Kimo's Furniture Maui at 151 East Wauke Avenue, just down the street from Midas, and visit our website at chemosfurnituremaui.com.
News, talk, sports. KAOI 1110 AM and 96.7 FM, 96.5 and 98.7 FM.
You're tuned to 1110 AM, 96.7 FM, news, talk, and sports for Maui. Jack is here behind the controls for On the Couch with Don Couch.
Hello. Hello. How are you?
Hello. I'm fine. How are you again?
Good. So we have a great group with us today. We have Alana Yurkanen, Tova Callender, and James Strickland. And you guys are with Hui Oka Viola, which is the Clean Ocean Team, I guess. That's what it says on your shirts. At least two of your three shirts.
Alana.
And we're talking about the water studies that they released the findings for South Maui. They're going to release the findings for West Maui here soon. When is that going to be?
A presentation will be given on July 30th. Location is still being determined.
Okay.
But the third partner of Hui Oka Viola, Maui Nui Marine Resource Council,
yes,
has been amazing at sending out those kinds of details.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
So you're a partnership of how many groups?
Three organizations.
They are?
The Nature Conservancy,
okay,
Maui Nui Marine Resource Council, and West Maui Ridge to Reef Initiative.
Okay, great. And we're talking about the study, at least that we got information for last June in the Maui News. Why are we doing this study? Let's talk about that a little bit.
Right. So essentially, the seed of this organization came from people observing massive brown water events, especially initially starting on the West Coast, and mm-hmm. asking what can we do about it, because we know this is impacting our reefs and we know it's impacting human health. And the reefs are getting hit hard by many factors. As Tova mentioned over the break, it's dying a death of 1,000 cuts. There are just so many things that are threatening and stressing out our reefs. And some of them are global, happening on a very large scale, like ocean warming.
Correct.
Climate change, and some of these threats are local, things like massive amounts of sediment going into the ocean or nutrients seeping in from our groundwater from runoff. And if you think about the coral reef as having an immune system, what can we do to help booster that immune system? And so feeling empowered about addressing those local threats, if we help to mitigate, cut down, reduce the local stressors, The thinking is then our reefs will be stronger, they'll be more resilient, they'll be ready to take on these types of global threats.
Okay.
When they arrive.
And so you decided, you worked with the State Department of Health for protocol and you're testing, I'm going to say, really near shore waters. Mm-hmm. But, and that's real interesting, too. You say knee high or just about, but there's not really that many reefs inside there. So you're saying, if the water is that bad there, it might be effective there. Is there any plan on expanding that to say, okay, maybe 5 feet deep or 10 feet deep, that kind of thing? And it'd be harder with citizen science because then they have to be at least adept at snorkeling. Mm-hmm. It's hard. How do you do it if you go down? I don't know. It gets real complicated the further out you go.
It's a great question. And we found early on that there are a lot of different directions we could go with water quality monitoring. And so we sat down with the support from Nature Conservancy, was that last year, Elena? And did days and days of strategic planning to figure out how do we grow with our goals in mind, but not so fast that we won't be sustainable over time,
right,
in making sure our core mission of having this baseline data collected is happening. So that's potentially a direction to have some growth in. It's not going to be happening imminently.
No.
We work through partnerships on the land that are dealing with management. That was a part of our thing we were holding to when we first started out, is we didn't just want to collect. We want to collect where we know there's someone who can help see it through. So in some cases, like in West Maui, for example, where I'm focused, I am going to have to figure out that transect monitoring that takes it farther out to the reef because it's being demanded of the federal partners that I work with.
Oh,
so,
okay.
I mean, there's going to be some figuring out how to do that.
Okay, so I guess there are some people keeping an eye on you and saying, hey, we'd like more information further out kind of thing.
Yeah, lots of partners interested in the coral reefs in Maui
so
Nui.
Are they interested in forking over some bucks? Because I was going to ask you, where you get your funding from?
Great question.
Somebody? Anybody?
Nobody knows where the money's coming from.
Yeah.
That sounds like the government.
Well, We have been very fortunate to have a number of grants over the last several years that have funded the formation of the program and have gotten us to the point of having a stable program with dedicated staff and volunteers. Those have come from private parties, from properties, from the County of Maui, thank you very much, from National Fish and Wildlife Foundation, and you know, a lot of effort from the groups and people that are involved.
Mm-hmm.
In order to sustain this over time, and Alana was mentioning this earlier, that it's very appealing to fund a pilot project to get it off the ground and do proof of concept, but it's a little bit less sexy once it's just carrying on collecting data every 3 weeks.
And the state doesn't help you at all? I mean, this, I would think that this is something right down their wheelhouse.
Well, hey, certainly help the state.
Yeah, it's going to help the state. Also, you know, HTA. I mean, this is huge.
HTA has provided funding.
Oh, okay, okay.
Yeah.
So what it really boils down to, even though we are leveraging a lot of different people, both volunteers and the organizations that are helping to push this all forward, there still is a cost per site per year, sampling every 3 weeks, of about $4,000.
Mm.
And so we are looking for entities, individuals, groups of people who feel like sponsoring a site.
So 4,000 per year per site, and you have 20 sites on South Maui and 19 on the... Okay, so that's kind of expensive.
It is kind of expensive.
I mean, it's pretty necessary stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And so do you have a team or somebody that's just out there looking for grants out, you know, EPA grant, all kinds of, I mean, I'm sure that there's a lot of federal funds that might be available.
Well, one of the essential functions that Maui Nui Marine Resource Council provides as one of the three partners in this coalition is the fiscal agent aspect, and they are savvy and fantastic at writing grants and building relationships to try and attract funding. And we all work on that to some degree. They happen to have some great skills that have helped with that. But it is an ongoing, it's the part that never ends. I mean, a sustainable program means you have to find funding constantly.
And as Tova mentioned, it's transitioning from relying more on grants to this concept of adopting a beach. So if you look at the map of where Huiokawaiʻola monitors, right now our farthest north site is Honolua, and our in South Maui, our lowest site is Ahihi, Kīnaʻula Natural Area Reserve. So if you look at that map, we have a website, by the way, huiokawaiola.com.
Oh, there you go. Got that in.
Where we just put our annual report up. And you feel connected to one of those sites and you resonate that this is important work, and understanding what's going on with water quality empowers the next steps that need to be taken to improve it, then it would be excellent to consider either contributing as a volunteer or donating to that specific site to ensure that monitoring can continue.
So you mentioned Ahihi just out of, you know, just a little sidetrack there. But you said all sites exceed sediment standards. So
exceed at least one state standard. So it could be for nutrients. It could be for turbidity.
Okay. So what's happening at Ahihi?
Minor turbidity impairment and a minor nutrient impairment.
When you say minor, what does that mean?
I mean, it's only a few times over.
Relative
the
to
state
the
standard.
Sites.
It's not relative to the 105 times over, like
well,
St.
Yeah,
Cold Park for nitrate
and
nitrite.
So I wonder where that, I mean, again, that's got to be upcountry nutrients way out there, you know, because there's no other activity other than maybe there's not a lot of people in the water. But how many cesspools are out in that area? Not, I mean, any... Any location, any house there probably is cesspool. But how far? Oh, we have a phone call.
Yeah.
Oh, yay.
Good morning. You're on the air live, 11:10 a.m.
Good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
Happy New Year. Oh, not Happy New Year. Happy 4th of July.
Happy 4th. Yeah, it's mid-year.
I have one real quick question to the bottom line. Is all drinking water safe or not?
Drinking water. Okay.
Great question.
Is that what you're talking about?
No, we're talking about
water supply.
Yeah, we're kind of talking about the ocean water.
Oh, where the runoff goes.
Yes.
Oh,
that
well,
we do not recommend drinking.
Yeah, that's a good point.
I wouldn't recommend drinking that either. Okay, I was only half listening. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I knew it was about water, and I was walking a dog in a cane field. Whatever. Okay. Okay. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you.
Aloha. Bye-bye.
In a cane field that has been inundated with all kinds of nutrients.
Mm-hmm. He's infected.
Yeah.
He might as well go to Cove Park.
Can I jump back to the website for
sure,
a second?
Sure, sure.
I just want to make it clear that we were reporting at a certain interval of having collected data where we felt like we had enough to share in South Maui.
Yeah.
But that data is always available. So huiokavaiola.com, Alana has built a beautiful website, and Kim Flinsky has helped with some of the visualization of some of our data.
Hey, you know those millennials. They...
I know. We rely on them heavily to make things beautiful and communicated well. And so I recommend going to our website, and you can, if you're interested, look up and see how your area is doing and download the full data set if you really want to get
it. And so as data is collected, it's being reported, so it's fluctuating?
Yeah, the data is uploaded 4 times a year.
Okay.
And I should mention, if you download the raw data and you're hoping for a very clear answer, you probably won't find it because it's in an Excel spreadsheet. It's all the raw parameters collected and organized.
Sure.
The annual report, which is on the website, helps to summarize that into bite-sized pieces and interpret a little bit more. But if you like playing around with raw data, it was a really important mission of Huiokavaiola to have that transparency with our numbers and make it available for whether you're an interested citizen or someone who's trying to use data for other projects.
Gotcha. And as we say, you know, you're trying to get funding, and that's Maui Nui Marine
Resource Council.
Mm-hmm. So you guys don't deal too much with that. It's the third partner that's not here.
And who so generously handles the heavy lifting of being the fiscal agent.
Gotcha. Yeah, because, you know, that's important to get the funding to keep this study going, at least.
Mm-hmm. Another big part of that is James's job, recruiting and maintaining volunteers.
Yeah, okay.
Because they are the feet on the ground.
What is your turnover rate on that?
I would say it's a trickling process, to where on the both sides, west side and south side, we have about 20 volunteers each. And so we're always looking for one or two new volunteers because we'll have people off island or they do just move away. And Tova mentioned it earlier. Are the volunteers, it's not a casual volunteering.
Right.
It's not, they're not, you're not easily replaced if you can't make it to a sampling session. So even though it's once every 3 weeks, you know, we really do try to strive to or just have that commitment that you're going to go out that once every 3 weeks.
So does the same person go to the same site every time, or do you mix them up just to help with the sampling randomness?
So it's the same team. It's a team of about 4 or 5, and they go to the same. Each team has about 5 sites that they'll go to and monitor.
Oh, sample. Okay.
Yeah, and that way it's really neat because the team really gets a good feel of the numbers and the data. So it sort of removes them from just being robots, just putting the meter in the water and reading the number. If they're like Honolulu Bay, if they they're very familiar with the turbidity readings. So if they know, if they get a reading that, you know, is twice what they're used to, then they can stop, they can think about it, they can discuss. It's at their discretion. They can reread or retest.
Mm. Mm-hmm. Okay, so, yeah, like you say, it's not just casual, we'll go get a bucket. Well, at first I thought it was a vial of water, but...
And we have syringes.
Syringes, yeah. James likes those syringes, doesn't he? but it's so... To volunteer, you got to learn a lot, I guess.
Yeah, well, and that's another great thing about having the teams of the 4 or 5, because you're constantly checking each other. Because since you only do it every 3 weeks, it's easy to forget, you know, some minutia or some little step. But, you know, the guy on your right or the girl on your left will say, hey, wait a minute. You're not supposed to be, you know, you're not supposed to touch the turbidity vial or something, or because you'll get fingerprints on it that could skew the reading. But constant checking with each other.
And what's incredible and the motto of Hui'oka Waiola is the quality of our water equals the quality of our life, because everyone is impacted by water quality, especially on an island. We are so close to all of our resources. And so the challenge hasn't been so much maintaining volunteers, because the caliber of people who are showing up are incredible. Mm-hmm. This program would not exist without the caliber of volunteers that we have. And they tend to be very interested and passionate in water quality. And as an issue, everyone is interested, is this water safe to fish in, to swim mm-hmm. in? So in terms of gathering interest, there's so much interest and compassion for water quality. And back to our reefs for a second, the reefs play a really important role for us.
Oh, right? Yeah.
They prevent 97% of wave impacts for the shoreline.
Yes.
So helping protect our coastal infrastructure, especially with sea level rise. The numbers just came out that they provide over $1 million a day for local economy, mm-hmm. which is kind of mind-blowing. And
so I have a question, talking about reefs, and I'm not sure, you know, if any of you guys have that kuleana, but almost 20 years ago now, maybe, I think, they started doing artificial reefs, certainly in Keavakapu, I believe. There was the concrete stuff, and then at some time I had heard, and I'm not sure if that's true, about cleaned up vehicles that mm-hmm. went down in there. Not sure. Has anybody taken a look at, you know, it's been long enough now for some sort of results for the artificial reefs. Mm-hmm. Has that worked at all?
I don't know.
It's not something you're working on?
Mm-mm.
Okay.
No, I mean, there is a lot of energy right now around reef restoration.
Yeah.
And
that's the other part, is not only artificial reefs, but growing the coral and then transplanting. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm not a reef geek directly. I hang out with a lot of reef geeks. I aspire to be a reef geek. My understanding is, if we don't clean up the coastal water quality that the reefs are living in, good luck getting
good
anything
luck
to survive, whether you've outplanted it or stuck it on a ball made of concrete. You need to clean up the coastal water quality. So we have to do everything, because time is fleeting in terms of reef health. Mm-hmm. And so that has to be a part of the solution set. But let's start with protecting what we have right now.
Yeah.
And that means being really mindful about everything that happens on the land has an impact on the ocean.
So interesting, you talked about the runoff is not so much, I mean, you're getting a little bit of a combination of both. It's coming down into the groundwater as opposed to running off the surface. Is it 50-50, or you're not sure?
I don't think we've parsed it out like that. And the other part of when I first started working in this field that was fascinating to me was that the science isn't quite there to unequivocally establish causality between a pollutant coming down and what's killing the reef.
Mm.
And so we aren't quite at the point of being able to say, oh, it's a one-to-one. This is because you washed your car and all the heavy metals ran off your brake pads down into the water and that's what did it. We're not at that level. But we do know there's a number of things that contribute
sure.
to bad water quality.
And sure,
and
that's
manage all of that.
That's the thing that we kind of talked about a little bit during the break, is that, you know, sometimes people are concentrating on one little thing and then saying, okay, I did it, I'm taking care of it, the reefs are going to be cool. That's not the case. What we were talking about was the sunscreen ban. Yeah, that is like you said, 1,000 cuts. That's one of the cuts, but it's one of the minor cuts, whereas we get a lot of runoff. I mean, I've always been saying runoff is our biggest issue at this point, and they're trying. It kind of concerns me a little bit that you're saying that even if you can handle the runoff that comes down from the mountain, a lot of it is going into the groundwater from the surface. So that's kind of scary, because, you know, the retention basins do work for the water coming off the surface, but that water, you know, the silt that it collects, is some of that water goes down into the groundwater as well. So I don't know. So it works for the
Which
surface
we want,
water.
Right? We want infiltration. We want to have a sustainable
sure.
water supply. but we want to be mindful of whatever we're putting on the land will end out in the ocean.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the take home. And that, whether it's at your personal level in your yard or whether it's in larger applications.
Ah, okay. So you have to be really, really careful.
Yeah, I think, I'm sure you guys have done it, paddling in the Sugar Beach area as opposed to Keavacapu. I go sidewalks all the time. I swim. I take off there all the time. But Sugar Beach, don't want to deal with it. Excuse me. The reef is dead. It's really sad, to look at. So,
and that's the thing. Sugar Beach, what's, you know,
yeah,
what's there? I know those condos are there, but I'm pretty much sure that at Sugar Beach they're all hooked to the sewer system. However, Motlaya, it is not. All the condos there aren't, but that's all part of the same bay. You know what I mean?
Well, I think what's there is in the name, sugar.
Ah, okay.
So it's connected hydrologically to many years of intensive agriculture.
True. And, you know, interesting where the water from Kalia Pond comes from. Everybody, it's always been my thought, oh, it's coming from upcountry, but it's not. It's actually coming from the West Maui side. Most of that water is coming from the West Maui side.
And interestingly, Kalia Pond has some of the lower measurements for nutrients and turbidity. And
outside Kalia Pond, or do you actually do Kalia?
The knee-deep water.
Outside.
Coastal water outside Kalia Pond. And unlike West Maui, South Maui doesn't have streams, except for Waikapu Stream, which empties into Kalia Pond before going into the ocean.
Right.
And Kalia Pond is a wetland.
Yes.
Buffers that water and helps to filter and clean. So that's, I'm guessing, one of the reasons why those levels are better at Kalia Pond.
Yeah. But that's, you know, those nutrients are going somewhere, but I guess they're being filtered before they get into the groundwater.
Those wetland plants do a really important job.
And that's what wetlands are for. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, in Kihei, they built way back when. They said, oh, we can beat Mother Nature. We'll build over all the wetlands. Mm-hmm. And that was kind of crazy. Mm-hmm. And now they're flooding despite all the precautions that they, you know, the physical precautions that were taken, and everybody's complaining, and it's one of those, do you continue that fight, or do you say, hey, look, you lived in, you maybe you didn't build in the wetland. Oh, 1 minute.
Yes.
What happened to the 2 minutes?
I was flashing your face on it, like that.
Okay, sorry. Anyway, thank you guys. Hui O Ka Viola is the website, .com or .org?
.com.
And we got to go. We've less than a minute. Just went right out the door.
Wow.
All right. Thank you so much for joining us.
Buy flares.
I guess.
Thank you for having us.
You bet.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Okay. Happy 4th, everybody. Until
happy
next
4th.
Week.
Aloha. Be safe.
On the Couch was brought to you by Access Hardware. Let them help you with your security solutions, design, and consulting. Go to accesshardware.net or call 871-4200.
Jack, just from Virginia Rail News Center. Hurricane Barbara, the second named storm in the eastern Pacific this year.